Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Yes, it is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus you on the events of the week. So glad to have you back here in the studios, joined as always by my extremely attractive audio engineer. So good to be back. So good to be back. I'm not sure. It's one of these things where I'm not sure where to start or what to say or anything. Have you ever just looked at a microphone and you just don't know what to do? Anyway, well, I'm not there yet, but I'm almost there because I'm a little off. I'm a little off. Doing the show on Saturday is kind of weird, but it's just necessary with the flow of life here at the McBurney compound. Yes, the girls are out as we speak testing out their new bow and arrow. Yes, that was quite comedic to watch if you had an opportunity. It was quite fun. I'm anxious to see when our oldest comes back if she's got a big red raw stripe down the middle of her arm like I used to get when I first tried out a bow and arrow. Well, it should be fun to watch, and we'll be able to view it during the recording of the broadcast this evening as we go to tape. I had a wonderful morning this morning as I was preparing to get ready to go down to Denver Bible Church to install some windows with some good friends of mine. Now that the winter is over, we're installing the weatherproof windows, that's about my schedule. That's the story of my life, right? The winter passes, the freezing temperatures are finally behind us, and now we install the weatherproof windows. But the nice thing is that they'll be there for 20-some-odd years. So we'll appreciate that when the cold weather returns. But this morning, as I was preparing to go to work, I enjoyed a bowl of Crunch Berries with my daughters, and it was one of the more joyful experiences of my life, and I realize I have a thing about Crunch Berries. Now, first of all, I don't want to hear anything from you people about me feeding my children Captain Crunch or Crunch Berries, okay? Because our children probably eat more tofu and kale than anyone else in this audience on a regular basis. So once in a while, they go for the Crunch Berries, mostly because I bought them. Last time they went to the grocery store, Dad came along, which is somewhat unusual, and there were the Crunch Berries. So we stocked up, and I realized I have this association, this positive association with Captain Crunch. Specifically the Crunch Berries brand. And I hadn't really thought about this in a long time, but I wondered, why is it that every once in a while I have to go for the Captain Crunch with the Crunch Berries? And I remembered as I was falling asleep at some point last week, I remembered what it was about Crunch Berries. So growing up in the McBurney household, brand name sugar sweetie cereals were not a regular fare. No. We got the generic rice puffs in a bag, was the general. Not even the brand name Cheerios. We got the Oatios in the bag, right? And so I never grew up eating sweet sugar cereals, and especially not the brand name stuff, not the good stuff. And so I remember, after I had gotten out of the service, I got myself a little apartment, a little furnished apartment, and I bought myself a used car, I got a job, and for the first time in my life, I had my own money, real money, not play money like they gave us in the military. Because, you know, in the military, you didn't have any responsibilities. You got your three meals a day, you didn't have to pay rent, and so it wasn't like real money, it was just money they gave you for being a hero and risking your life for your country. Or in my case, laying around the barracks in a subtropical temperatures and going out to the beach every now and again. So I never had any of my own real money until I was in my early 20s and I was out of the military. And I remember distinctly leaving my tiny furnished apartment in my yellow Subaru and driving down to Ralph's on Oceanside Boulevard and going into Ralph's and looking up and down the aisle and realizing that I could pretty much buy whatever I wanted. Anything I wanted, I could have because it was my money. I had worked hard for it. I had earned it. And I remember walking up and down the cereal aisle and looking at the Rice Puffs in the bag and the generic brands. They were all at the top, by the way, up top out of the reach of the children. And then there at the bottom, I saw them, the Crunch Berries. And I thought, there's nothing stopping me from buying these Crunch Berries right now. And I could go home, and if I wanted to, I could eat Crunch Berries for 3 meals a day. And I think I did for a few days. The thing about Crunch Berries, though, it's a self-limiting exercise. Because at a certain point with the Crunch Berries, the inside of your mouth gets so raw and painful that you have to stop eating them. So there's a built-in safety valve in the Crunch Berries. And I and my daughters, we ate our Crunch Berries right up to that limit this morning. And it was just joyful and fun and pleasurable. And so I just wanted to pass that along. So had a great morning and went down, put in some windows. And now here I am to do the weekly worldview. And I know that you're all on the edge of your seat just waiting. And I'm glad that you're there. But I have to start out with a rather disturbing story, as is usually the case here on the show. But we want to go and talk about Easter. Easter, last week was Easter Sunday, and while so many of us were participating in lighthearted, joyful fun or worshipful services, Easter in the Islamic State, as reported on PamelaGeller.com, Pamela reports that ISIS carried out a crucifixion of an Indian Catholic priest in Yemen. He had been kidnapped about 3 weeks prior, according to the Mail Online. Father Tom Uzunalil was kidnapped by ISIS gunmen in Yemen, and they had been threatening publicly to crucify a Catholic priest on Good Friday, and they carried that out last Good Friday. They released a video, as they are wont to do, and this Catholic priest, who happened to be Indian, was in fact crucified at the age of 56 years on Good Friday by the Islamic State. And the news didn't come out until the night of Easter. And it's awful that they would do this, but the thing that the ISIS pagan maniacs don't realize is that they gave Father Tom Uzunalil the ultimate glory as a Christian and especially as a priest. And so there are inglorious ways to die. There are embarrassing ways to die, unfortunate ways to die. There are horrible, torturous ways to die. But there are very few people given the honor of dying for the name of Jesus Christ. And while we wish this hadn't happened, we wish that the governing authorities of the dying Western democracies had been able to rescue the priest from these backwards, third-world, cavemen-like maniacs. We do want to give honor to Father Tom Uzunalil, kidnapped and crucified on Good Friday by the Islamic State. And now in glory forever with Jesus Christ, they killed his body, but what does that mean in the long run of eternity? Well, for Father Tom, it means glory, dying for the name of Jesus Christ. And while we're saddened that the West and our leaders seem so impotent that they can't fight and rescue the citizens who've been kidnapped and killed by ISIS, we do give honor to Father Tom. Now, let's go a little deeper into the war file. I've got a report here from Breitbart. The Chaldean Archbishop of Erbil has testified that for many long centuries, Christians of Iraq have experienced hardships and persecutions, but he says, what we have now experienced are the worst acts of genocide in our homeland. He says, we are facing the extinction of Christianity as a religion in Iraq at the hands of the Islamic State. And others, by the way, and others, other moderate Muslims as well have participated. And by the way, this same testimony, this is a report compiled by the Knights of Columbus and an outfit called In Defense of Christians. They've been collecting testimony from those in Iraq and Syria who have fallen into the hands of the Islamic State. They report that the Christian population in Syria has precipitated from 1.5 million to just around 500,000 in just 5 years. Two-thirds of the Christians being driven out or killed in Syria as a result of targeted Christian persecution. The Chaldean Bishop of Aleppo reports that the number of Christians in Aleppo alone has fallen from over 160,000 to just 40,000 in that same five-year period of civil war. Last week, the president of the Iraqi Bishops' Conference published an Easter message in which he implored the remaining Christians not to leave Iraq despite the hardships. He says they need to stay united in these lands of ours in which we were born, where we have lived for 1,400 years. Wow, that's tough. I mean, we worry about people looking at us the wrong way or making an unfriendly post about us on Facebook because we're Christians, maybe making fun of us. While in Mesopotamia, Christianity is all but being annihilated, and they're trying to hold on. This story covered by Breitbart, the Knights of Columbus in defense of Christians. The major news outlets, the mainstream media outlets, they report scantily, if at all, on the Holocaust of Christians in the Middle East. The Associated Press is silent. Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Associated Press here in just a few minutes. But Pope Francis has advice for all of us in his Easter message. This is from the Strange Religion file. The Pope Francis, in his Easter message, urged the world to use weapons of love to combat the evil, specifically following the Islamic State attacks in Brussels. Use the weapons of love, says the Pope. Here's what he said. He said, may the risen Jesus draw us closer on this Easter to the victims of terrorism, that blind and brutal form of violence which continues to shed blood in different parts of the world. The Pope mentioned Belgium and other attacks in Turkey, Nigeria, Chad, Cameroon, Ivory Coast, and Iraq. With the weapons of love, God has defeated selfishness and death, says the Pope. And, I appreciate the fact that the Pope apparently at least mentioned the name of Jesus Christ as he urged us to fight the Islamic State with the weapons of love. And I somewhat agree with this. I do believe that the gospel of Jesus Christ is the only thing that will defeat Islamism. But unfortunately, the Pope doesn't understand that while we're preaching the gospel of peace, we will have to busy ourselves killing those who desire to make war upon us and our neighbors and our fellow Christians. And I think we could do both. We should have an active military strategy and an active strategy of proselytization. But the odds of that happening in a post-Christian West are, well, they're virtually nil. And the odds of the Pope's strategy of strictly using the weapons of love to defeat ISIS, well, that's just not realistic. And so here we are, seeing Mesopotamia in flames, and the Christians being exterminated, and the West, the fallen, pagan, post-Christian, dying democracies, seemingly helpless against forces of darkness, the likes of which we haven't seen in over half a century. Don't give up. Now we can go back 70-some-odd years, and we can look at one of the more recent iterations of the current ugliness that we're seeing unleashed upon the face of the world. I've got a story from the Times of Israel. They report that the Associated Press news agency willingly cooperated with the Nazi government in Germany, submitting to the regime's restrictive rulings on the freedom of the press and providing it with images from its photo archives to be used in its anti-Semitic and anti-Western propaganda machine. This is according to a new report. The Times of Israel reports that in 1933, all international news agencies except the U.S.-based Associated Press were forced to leave Germany. The AP continued to operate in the Third Reich right up until 1941, when the U.S. joined World War II. And this is according to German historian Harriet Scharnberg. She says that the AP was only allowed to remain there because it signed a deal with the devil, a deal with the Nazi regime. The news agency submitted itself to the Schriftleitergesetz, or the editor's law, agreeing not to print any material calculated, quote, to weaken the strength of the Reich abroad or at home. Harriet Scheinberg's research was first reported by the UK-based leftist, abortionist, homosexualist Guardian newspaper, proving that even the leftist, abortionists, and homosexualists recognize the treasonous behavior of the Associated Press during the Nazi regime, while the Guardian participates in similar behavior today. Yes, ignoring the atrocities being carried out systematically against Christians. But the Guardian is willing to look back 75 years or so and cast blame upon the AP, as it should be cast. The AP images appeared in many of the regime's propaganda publications for the Nazis. Most of the images in a pamphlet called Jews in the U.S. were provided by the AP to the Nazis. And in a different publication that the Nazis entitled The Subhuman, the AP provided the second largest number of photographs. The Guardian, leftist, homosexualist, abortionist newspaper, The Guardian in London, writes, "Is it possible to argue that the AP's agreement with the Nazis allowed the West a peek into a repressive society that may otherwise have been entirely hidden from view?" At which point I say, well, no, actually it was treasonous and horrific, and they should have known better. And we didn't need the AP to know what the Nazis were up to. Thank you very much. I just mentioned what's happening, the genocide of the Christians in Mesopotamia, in Iraq, an 80% reduction in Christians. And the AP and the others are all silent on it, virtually silent. They give some symbolic coverage so that they can at least say, oh, no, we covered it. Didn't you see on April 9th, 2014, we had a story that ran on page 18 of the... So they give some lip service, but generally silent. And they didn't even have to sign a deal with the Islamic State in order to ignore what's happening or downplay what's happening. They just do it by nature. The Associated Press being full of people who've graduated journalism school sometime in the last 50 years and have been taught to basically act very similar to the way the AP acted in the 1930s and early 1940s and basically be apolitical to some degree and so that they could retain their access. But now we have a generation now that is of journalists specifically that are far more disengaged from any sense of conscience than were the reporters of the 1930s and 40s. They don't even have to be persuaded. They just do it by nature. It's just who they are. Meanwhile, there is another prisoner who has been taken by the North Korean maniac, Kim Dong-un. A report from the Mirror in London says that a North Korean defector says that the American student who's been imprisoned by the regime and who faces a 15-year sentence is living in a detention camp that the North Korean defector compares to nothing short of Auschwitz. Otto Warmbier is the 21-year-old American student. He's sentenced to 15 years hard labor by Kim Dong-un's regime. The defector says that prisoners at the camp where 21-year-old Otto Warmbier is being held are forced to watch public executions. They're physically abused, hit, and tortured. He says they're woken up at 5 a.m. and forced to work all day into the evening. Woken up at 5 a.m. and forced to work until sunset. Mr. Warmbier was caught stealing a Kim Jong-il poster from a North Korean hotel, which is just odd. He claims that someone in his church group back home had requested the poster. And stealing the poster has landed this poor soul in a North Korean prison for 15 years, where the impotent powers of the post-Christian pagan dying West are completely impotent to rescue him or secure his release. And it's just embarrassing. That's the first I had heard of this story. It's an American held by the North Koreans, and I got the news in a British newspaper, believe it or not. So, well, there you have that. I guess we should move back across the pond to go into our personhood file, where we will report on the statements of Mr. Donald Trump, his latest, Chris Matthews, and he engaged in an interview. And Chris Matthews pressed Donald Trump on the abortion of child killing, the wholesale legalized murder of innocent children that takes place in your neighborhood and mine every day here in America. And the civil society is virtually silent on the matter, having been inured after 40 years, more than 40 years now, of legalized butchery of innocent people. But it's still a hot topic if you want to trip up a Republican politician, especially one like Donald Trump, relatively new to the term pro-life, let alone the idea that he is pro-life, which is a ludicrous idea. But Matthews pressed him and said, if you say abortion is a crime or abortion is murder, you have to deal with it under the law, he said to Donald Trump. And Trump responded, what are you saying? Wait, are you saying we're going to put him in jail, Is that the punishment you're talking about, Chris? And finally, Chris Matthews got Trump to admit He says, well, if the answer is that there has to be some sort of punishment. Yeah. If we were to change the law, there would have to be some sort of punishment. And the entire media just completely went just nuclear ballistic. Pro-lifers came out and distanced themselves from the idea that anyone should be punished for an abortion, except maybe the doctor who did it. And, of course, the pro-aborts, well, they're just clenched teeth. Their veins were bulging. They were just freaking out all over the place. How dare you even suggest that a woman be punished for an abortion? Let's see here. Later, however, the Trump campaign released a statement, of course. And here's what Trump had to say after he consulted with his consultants. Maybe his wife, I don't know. Trump says if Congress were to make abortion illegal, the doctor and any other person performing this illegal act upon a woman would be held legally responsible, not the woman. The woman is a victim. My position has not changed, says Trump, right? Just bold-faced, because he can pretty much say what he wants, I suppose. He says, my position has not changed. Like Ronald Reagan, I am pro-life, with exceptions. Exceptions, yes. I'm sure that Donald has made a number of exceptions over his illustrious philandering career for the case of abortion. Who do you think has personally paid for more abortions? Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? He asked all the Trump supporters out there who call themselves Republicans, who call themselves Christians, who call themselves pro-life. Who do you think has personally paid for more? Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton put together, or Donald Trump? Yeah. Well, just think about that. Let that one sink in. Trump was criticized by both pro-life and pro-abortion groups. This is as reported on Breitbart. And I thought about this. Being an abortion abolitionist myself and someone who supports the idea that the unborn child is a person who has an unalienable right to life from God, not because of any social convention or any tradition, but because the child is made in the image and likeness of the living God and must be treated with at least that much dignity and respect, whether that child, no matter what that person's state of dependence is upon anyone else. So being that that is my frame of mind, have I ever formulated an answer to the question of should a woman be punished for having an abortion? Were we to... as Trump said, if we were to change the law. What Donald Trump and so many Republicans don't realize is that the laws against abortion, they weren't really changed to make abortion legal. They were simply overridden by an opinion issued by a Republican Supreme Court in 1973. So I take issue with the idea that the law needs to be changed. I think the issue is that the right to life of every innocent person needs to be enforced and defended by the United States government. So, anyway, I was preparing an email to send out to a number of my pro-life friends just asking, have we ever crafted an answer to this? And I just went ahead and crafted my own. And I imagine that were I to sit down with Chris Matthews, running for some office, let's say, and Chris tried to trip me up with the gotcha question. Well, are you saying that a woman should be thrown in prison for having an abortion? Is that what you think? Huh? Well, let me tell you how I think it would go. If Chris asked me the same question he asked Donald Trump, let's see, what exactly did he ask him? Oh, if you say abortion is a crime, abortion is murder, then you have to deal with it under the law. And I would say, you know, Chris, were the right to life to once again be defended by the government, every person convicted of involvement in an abortion would bear guilt. As to what the punishment might be, that should be determined by the judge. And then Chris would get that thrill up his leg, and he would ask the inevitable follow-up question, So you do believe a woman should be punished for having an abortion. Is that what you're saying, Mr. McBurney? And I would say, Chris, relax, calm down. The idea of a judge determining punishments for criminal acts is not my idea. It's not even a new idea, Chris. Matthews says, but what do you believe, Mr. McBurney? What do you believe? You, what would you do? Would you punish the woman? Well, Chris, I believe that abortion is murder. And I will continue to work toward a day when the unalienable right to life of all innocent people is once again defended by the government. And Chris, I believe that once that happens, we will all be able to clearly see who deserves punishment and who does not. Matthew says, so does the woman deserve punishment? That's what I want you to, what are you saying? Does the woman deserve the to be punished? I want you to answer the question. Well, Chris, abortion is still treated in our society as if it were legal. So, Chris, when that's no longer the case, I'd be willing to address any specific case that comes up. So you're saying you're going to dodge the question? You won't give an answer. Is that what you're saying? You're going to dodge? You're going to duck? You're going to dodge? You're not going to answer? Well, Chris, I will give you an answer when you can present me with the case of a person convicted of a crime in the case of an abortion. I'd be happy to give you my opinion on what the punishment should be. And I'll tell you what else I sincerely believe, Mr. Matthews, is that when the right to life is once again asserted and defended by our governing authorities, that there will be very, very few cases of abortion. And that most all of us here in America, men, women, and especially our children, will view innocent life as sacred once again. So I would hope to try to make Chris Matthews look mean in a case like that. And so the bottom line is that most abortions, in my estimation, most abortions are not instigated by the pregnant woman. I have a feeling that most of them are instigated by people around a pregnant woman for whom her pregnancy is extremely inconvenient or embarrassing. And I think in most cases, the most guilt in the case of an abortion would fall upon some man. I'm Doug McBurney. I'm trying to get in sorts. I feel a bit out of sorts, a little bit gloomy. I don't know why. I think normally when I do the show, I do it after having attended services at church, and I just have a more optimistic outlook, and I just feel out of sorts. But, well, let's continue because, you know, the upbeat tune might help me just get into a better mood. And we'll go down to Cuba. Yes, the propaganda machine was in full bloom over the past couple weeks over Barry Ho's trip down to Cuba. What with the dancing and the music and the baseball and all that, and did it right around Easter week, by the way. Probably unintentional because Barry Ho and his cadre were completely unaware that Resurrection Sunday was upon us as he was down in Cuba offering the formal surrender of the West to the Cuban dictator. But I want to talk about this Rolling Stones concert down there, as if the Cuban people haven't been through enough to have to witness the Rolling Stones live. I have an uncle who went to several Rolling Stones concerts in the 70s, and he said they were absolutely the worst shows he had ever seen in his life. They were horrible. The guitars were out of tune. Mick Jagger could barely walk around. Stagg, he said it was horrible. And I've never understood the fascination with the Rolling Stones, except to say that they are living proof that one only need a bare minimum of musical talent to be promoted to the top of the pile in the world of rock and roll. It's just a fact. I'm sorry. Those of you who are Stones fans, well, I hope you're offended. I hate the Rolling Stones. I have never been a fan. Anyway, they went down to Havana, Cuba a couple Fridays ago, and they put on a big free concert. Free concert, right? That's how CNN portrayed it. All the major networks reported on it. The pictures of Mick Jagger strutting around like an emaciated, strung-out grandfather, doing the same garbage that he did in 1969. Just a disgusting display. But let's see, the Miami Herald I have here reports that reporters, well, they gushed over the Rolling Stone concert down in Cuba, mentioning historic changes and reforms in Cuba. This concert is proof that Cuba has entered a new golden age and that all the tensions and distrust of the past 60 years have melted away by Barack Obama and Raul Castro. But what wasn't reported, at least in the mainstream media, was the fact that there's a corporation down in Cuba called Gaesa, and Raul Castro's military owns virtually every corporation involved in Cuba's tourism industry, which, by the way, tourism, the Herald reports, is among the Stalinist regime's top moneymakers lately. And Gaesa's chief executive officer is a son-in-law of Raul Castro, Major Luis Alberto Rodriguez Lopez Calleges. And so while the mainstream media, according to the Herald, dutifully promoted the Rolling Stones concert, the Cuban dissidents suffered a wave of arrests and beatings. Needless to add, this repression was dutifully ignored by the mainstream media while the money rolled in to the Castro regime. Yeah. Millions of dollars in tourist money was likely taken in by the Castro regime in cahoots with the Rolling Stones. Sympathy for the devil indeed. On bold display with absolutely no shame. Yeah. The AP estimated that half of the fans in the front sections of the concert were foreigners and that the concert wasn't actually free in any way because a lot of money exchanged hands. And it all ended up in the coffers of Raul Castro and the other Stalinist, communist, dictator, maniac, murderers, and thieves. And CNN is acting just like the AP in 1938. The propaganda wave on CNN leading up to and just after the Barry Ho visit and the Rolling Stones concert was something that would have made the best of the Nazi propagandists blush. It was absolutely orchestrated, perfectly executed, flawlessly. If you were a 20 or 30-something American, you would think that the golden age of Aquarius had dawned. It was despicable and disgusting to watch, and I think it was probably there were people like me in the 1930s sitting around wondering how long it was going to take for the Western media to catch on to the idea that Adolf Hitler was a threat to civilization across the world. How long were they going to go along with it? And I'm wondering to myself, how much longer is the news media going to just blindly follow the Pied Piper, Barack Obama, and George Soros, and the others who have inordinate influence upon them? And I just don't see any bottom to it. I don't see how it stops. I don't see what changes things. I don't see it for these people. And I'm speaking specifically of the people who call them journalists these days. All right. Now, I think that the state of journalism in America, along with the state of higher education and the culture in general, it all goes back, the flaws and the degeneration of our civilization can be traced in large part to a loss of a sense of justice in America. The justice system is, as a good friend of mine says, it's no longer a justice system. Now it's just a system. And we go to Texas, where CNN reports, we go to Colorado. CNN reports that a woman was staying at the rural Colorado home of one Claude Lee Wilkerson, 61 years old. The woman accused Wilkerson of chaining her to a bed and making her a sex slave for months. She was eventually unchained, which is how police eventually found her. She called them and asked that they come and arrest her and take her away in a police car because she was so terrified that if she tried to leave on her own, this maniac would kill her, that she wanted to leave in a police car. And the police did that. They did meet her, witnessed her situation, and escorted her from the premises. Now, this fellow Wilkerson is now facing several charges, including kidnapping, sexual assault, imprisoning. The woman was in her 20s. Wilkerson, CNN reports, and this is where we get to the state of decay in the justice system in the United States. Wilkerson was once a Texas death row inmate who was later freed. Wilkerson had been arrested and sentenced, he had been convicted and sentenced to death in 1979 in Harris County, Texas, after he confessed to an armed robbery of a jewelry store where three witnesses were murdered. But his convictions were all dismissed in 1983 because the police interrogated him without his attorney present, even though he had requested an attorney. And so this is the fact that this man was alive and able to imprison and abuse a woman is emblematic of the state of justice in America. It's despicable. It's embarrassing. It's in fact criminal. It is in fact criminal that this man was allowed to live and perpetrate his crimes against yet another human being. One of the police detectives who was involved in Wilkerson's original arrest and the man who actually took Wilkerson's confession, he's quoted as saying he's shocked that it took Wilkerson this long to get into trouble again. Just disgusting. I can barely take it. So, and it just doesn't get any better here as I'm looking through these headlines. But we will continue to march forward here. I've got a story, reason number 1,041, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. From McKinney, Texas, a Collin County, Texas charter school is considering making changes after parents complained that their elementary age students were taught age-inappropriate topics. Yes. Apparently, down at the Collin County, Texas charter schools, and the charter schools, by the way, those are the good schools. Those are the better ones. We fought hard for our charter schools, taking back local control, taking education back at the local level. Every year at the Collin County, Texas charter schools, 10th graders, well, they work on a personal project, and they're assigned this project. They work on it for several months. This year, some of the 10th graders chose subjects. They chose projects about various topics, like the impact of divorce, depression, and, of course, being transgendered, because that's just an extremely popular subject, especially amongst the young people. Why is that? It's because I'm convinced that young kids in the public schools know that if they bring up issues about sex, sexuality, especially homosexuality, and especially transgenderism, they will make their teachers extremely happy and will receive good grades. Because the teachers, for some reason, like to hear the kiddos talking about such subjects. Well, the high school students, the 10th graders, then presented their projects about divorce, depression, and transgenderism to the entire school, including the elementary school students. So students that were as young as 8 years old were exposed to the topics of, transgenderism, number one, and then, of course, depression, divorce, yada, yada. Things that eight-year-olds, shouldn't even have to ponder. Transgenderism, nobody should talk about that in public, for crying out loud. Well, the hapless parents are quite upset, and the school's administration officer said teachers reviewed all the projects ahead of time, and, we deemed them all appropriate. We didn't really notice that anyone would be offended that their eight-year-old would be hearing a presentation on transgenderism. And, we just didn't notice. We've got moms here who say, those topics are appropriate for high school, but I don't think my eight-year-old is prepared to tackle some of these things. I want to be the parent. I want to be able to walk through those things with them and not be surprised when my kid comes home and tells me he heard about a transgendered freak at school from the captain of the football team. Mom, you gave up your right to be the parent when you dropped off your kid 5 days a week for 8 hours a day with a bunch of post-Christian, pagan, antichrist public school educators and administrators. So I find it endlessly fascinating that parents who hand their kids over to an officially godless, moral-free zone, they're shocked when their students are psychologically abused by the perverts running the government school system. Let's see. We have a spokesman for the school, says we're addressing the parents' concerns. We will consider making changes. We do want to remind everyone that the presentations were made under teacher supervision, so we followed all the rules. Mom, you're the one who dropped the kid off here, okay? We followed the rules. The school continues to believe that the subject matter and discussion was age-appropriate, and I don't think it was even appropriate, period. So reason number 1,041 to get or keep your children out of the government schools, even in Texas, yes. All right. Now, reason number 1,040, if you're keeping track, these are in no particular order. We go to a report from the Christian Post. Delta County, Colorado schools will place literature provided by the Freedom from Religion Foundation, Western Colorado Atheists and Freethinkers, and the Satanic Temple. And they did so, as a matter of fact, on April 1st, appropriately enough. The Freedom from Religion Foundation made demands that, if you're going to allow people to hand out literature, you have to let everybody hand out literature. I mean, you're letting the faggots come in and hand out literature to the kids. You're letting Planned Parenthood come in. Why not these Satanists? Come on. What's your problem? Apparently, the county had allowed some religious groups as well to hand out some literature, and so the freethinkers and the Satanists, they all wanted their access to the minds of the youth as well. And, of course, the school district, being a bunch of hapless post-Christian morons, have no idea what to do, and so they let them in. And so the Satanists handed out literature on April Fool's Day. The Delta County School District says that their policy reads that we cannot discriminate against any group or organization when it comes to non-curricular matters. What are we supposed to do? So I understand that al-Baghdadi has applied to have ISIS operatives handing out literature in the coming weeks, and the school administrators simply, their hands are tied. So reason number 1,040 to get or keep your children out of the government schools: they may be recruited by freethinkers, atheists, Satanists, homosexualists, abortionists, and eventually even ISIS. That's why everybody wants to be so. All right, we're back. It's the Weekly Worldview. So glad to have you with us as we close in on the end of another fantastic, awesome broadcast on the fastest streaming show in the history of podcasts or such things. We go now to the Domestic Tranquility File, where we check in with CBS in Philadelphia, where four young boys have been identified after an outburst was caught on video. This is from CBS Philadelphia. The video depicts, let's see, how old were these kids? 6 to 7 year old kids. Okay, now sit there and just think about that for a second. 6 to 7 years old. If you've had kids, if you've seen kids, if you've ever been around any kids, think of them when they're 6 or 7 years old. Cutie pie, completely innocent, just lovable little children. In the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the video depicts 6 and 7 year old children cursing, hitting, and at one point even spitting on a passenger. These were four boys, I believe, on the train station. And the video depicts vulgar language from several very young aggressors. Yes, while riding on the subway. Their young ages, according to CBS in Philly, their young ages are what have the police so concerned. The four boys have been identified, and police are assisting them with social services. Oh, well, that'll help a lot. Let's see. I've got a spokesman for the police says the goal is to get these kids some help. That's these kids. Yeah, we're going to get them some help. They're beyond help. It's just unbelievable. The state of parenthood in America is crumbling rapidly, and the next generation is terrifying. I mean, I see them, even the young kids. When you're out in public, the public school kids, they're terrifying, frankly. What these kids need is a whipping, number one, immediately, to let them know they've done something wrong. And then they need someone who knows how to raise a child to intervene in their lives somehow, but that's virtually impossible, and so these kids are probably unsalvageable, which is a tragedy. And the blame lies squarely upon their parents, at least one of which is usually a woman. And so should a woman be punished for raising little monsters? Well, under the law, they probably won't be, but believe me, they should be and they shall be at some point, whether in this life or in the next. I can't imagine having a six-year-old kick and spit on me in the subway. But there you have it, Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Now on to the justice file. The investigators are asking private DNA databases such as exist at Ancestry.com and 23andMe.com. Investigators are demanding genetic information from companies to do companies who do ancestry research. So the cops are basically, if they don't find the criminal's DNA in their database of already arrested or already convicted people, they want to be able to go to these DNA databases and see if there's a match. Ancestry and 23andMe have received a total of 5 requests from law enforcement agencies for the genetic material of 6 individuals. Privacy advocates are concerned that the genetic information could be misused by investigators. So is that where we are, that we can't trust the law enforcement officials and judicial officials anymore? I think that we probably are there in too many cases, and that's scary, because the idea that the government or some private entities and databases could have everyone's DNA, it's a valuable thing if we could trust each other. If we could trust that the government or the police or the district attorney or the governor or the mayor would never use that against us unless we had committed a crime. But unfortunately, you know, this is how civilizations crack apart, is when nobody feels like they can trust each other anymore. And nobody's word is considered sacred anymore. And there's no authority that is considered untouchable. And unfortunately, we just don't have that anymore. I'm all for DNA databases. I want the government, the police, law enforcement, private industry, whoever wants to get it. I think that the government should mandate that everyone's DNA be put on file, so that it would help to deter crime. A lot of times, if people just think they might get caught, they won't do it. That would help. But no, we can't have that. Nobody trusts anybody anymore. Law enforcement agencies have access to convicted offenders and arrestees database, according to this AP story. Ancestry and 23andMe officials say their databases won't be useful to most criminal investigations because they analyze regions of DNA different from the locations forensics experts explore. Well, I find that implausible. I mean, if you've got their DNA, you've got their DNA. Just because you only look at one part of it doesn't mean that the investigators don't know where to look. But there is this tension. People don't want to give the government their data because people don't trust the government. They don't want to give it to judges. They don't want to give it to prosecutors. They don't want to give it to the police. And the popular culture and the news media are working day by day to drive a wedge further and further between the people and the governing authorities. And the governing authorities are doing everything in their power to earn the mistrust of the people. And that's just that's a situation that doesn't end well. I'm sorry. It ends tragically when a civilization dissolves due to a lack of trust. Nobody can trust anybody anymore. It's a sad state of affairs. Now, back to the justice file. In 2002, what do I have here? Let's see. A rapper here. A rapper known as C. Murda, who's serving a life sentence for killing a teenage fan, okay, in a Harvey nightclub back in 2002, Harvey, Louisiana, released a video for a new single last week. Let that one sink in. This guy's serving life in Angola for murder, and he released a video for his new single last week, and his management team says that the album Penitentiary Chances will come out in April. And C. Murda, did I mention he's serving life for murder? Yeah. Corrections, let's see, the Louisiana Department of Corrections began looking into how exactly C. Murda managed to record material from behind bars in January when reports of a new album first surfaced. Now, the rapper himself insists that any material released by his record company was recorded before he was incarcerated. However, the lyrics and the video appear to have been conceived after his conviction. Yes, and by the way, prisoners at Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angola are not allowed to record albums or songs. The Louisiana Department of Corrections wanted to make that clear. Well, they're not allowed to do albums, not allowed to do singles or videos. They're not allowed. This rapper, C. Murda, has released at least 4 albums while in prison. One governing official there noted that inmates aren't supposed to have social network accounts either. They're not allowed. But several social media accounts have been tied to this murderous rapper. And the Louisiana Department of Corrections did issue a statement that it regrets the victim's family and much of the public cannot be spared from this. This is unbelievable. How about the people at the record company all be arrested? How about that, for crying out loud? Kick in their doors and shut their outfit down. Releasing albums by a convicted murderer? Please. I mean, have we no... Well, no, we don't, as a matter of fact. We don't. All right. Now, let's get into some of my deepest, darkest fears from the science... Really? File. Yes, let's see. This is from the Christian Science Monitor. They report that Yellowstone's geysers and hotspots. Yellowstone, I said. Their geysers are just the latest in a protracted history of numerous catastrophic super eruptions that have burned a track along the Snake River eastward from Oregon to Yellowstone. This is according to geologists in the United Kingdom. A recent study published in the Geological Society of America bulletin identifies an area of great volcanic activity along the Snake River Plain between Oregon and Yellowstone. An international research team has found evidence of only 12 distinct eruptions, contradicting earlier theories that the eruptions were more numerous and less extreme. An emerging record of newly discovered super eruptions during a period of intense magmatic activity that they say occurred. Well, there is this emerging record. They say it occurred between 8 and 12 million years ago. Yes. And it produced a volcanic sheet that covers an area the size of Connecticut. And that sits in southern Idaho. That's just scary. I'm scared of Yellowstone. I'm not afraid to admit it publicly. It scares me. The Christian Science Monitor goes on that Yellowstone remains volcanically active, with a magma chamber stretching 55 miles long and 18 miles wide. If the Yellowstone supervolcano explodes, it could be up to 2,000 times as violent as Mount St. Helens. I mean, I'm getting more scared as I read it. They say three super eruptions at Yellowstone appear to have occurred in the recent cycle. And they explain this cycle as a 600 to 700,000 year cycle, starting about 2.1 million years ago. The most recent having taken place 640,000 years ago, suggesting that Yellowstone is overdue for an eruption. So it's the numbers that put this in the science, really, file. But I mean, if you convert the map and try to work with it, it could be that Yellowstone is in fact overdue for an eruption, whether those eruptions took place in the last 2.1 million years or the last 2.1 thousand years. It's just scary to think about what could happen. And you know what's even scarier? CNS News reports sometime in the next 4 years, the global population of human beings over 65 will surpass those under 5 years old for the first time in human history. They say this is a unique demographic phenomenon. It's unprecedented. And while Japan ranked as the oldest country, the other 24 of the other top 25 included 22 EU countries plus Canada and the United States. And in fact, the world's youngest countries are all in the Persian Gulf. Now that is something that could keep you awake at night when you think about demographics, human history, and the end of civilization. But let's not leave on a down note. I want everyone to just be happy, happy, because the Weekly Worldview will be back next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, American Right to Life, and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studio. Should the Lord Terry will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.